Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. Bernie Sanders calls for the big banks to be broken up. We'll ask a leading Wall Street analyst for an insider's take on breaking them up and living in the post-Dodd-Frank world. Are we in for an era of lower returns from banks? Are they still too big to fail? The big banks on the eve of their big annual meetings. All that's today on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Mike Mayo, managing director, leading Wall Street bank analyst at CLSA Americas, a global boutique securities firm. Been on the show two times before. This is his 30s, and outspoken, as I say, call it as it is, iconoclast, in other words, a rarity on Wall Street, precisely why we like him, was the only analyst to testify before the Senate Banking Committee hearings in 2002 on conflicts of interest on the street, and in 2008, Fortune magazine named him one of the eight who saw the financial crisis coming. In 2013, he won the Global Chartered Financial Analyst Award for Leadership and Ethics, and the last book he did, which is why he was on the show before, Exile on Wall Street, One Analyst's Fight to Save the Big Banks from Themselves. Mike, good to have your passion back.
Thanks for having me.
Let me just start off. Is Bernie right? Should the big banks be broken up?
Well, I think a lot of people are fighting the last war, and it's important to take a step back. The banks have de-risked and de-levered. That means they're just a lot less risky than they were before. Their foundations, their balance sheets, are safer than they've been in decades. So, you know, in contrast to a decade ago when we were saying you're going to have big problems in the banking industry, we're now saying, what I'm saying is banks, big banks are not going to fail. There's too much cushion to protect the downside. In fact, you almost have the opposite issue, and that is, you know, banks facilitate risk-taking in the economy, and you want banks to take some risk. And if you look at this economic cycle, the pace of loan growth, you know, the loans that businesses and individuals borrow, is only one-third of that for a typical economic cycle. So I think the regulatory pendulum was ridiculously loose before the financial crisis, but I think it's now swung a little bit too far in the other direction. Having said that, is Bernie Sanders right? So I think this should not be driven by the government at this point. I think shareholders should drive some breakups of some of the large banks that have been long-term underperformers.
And that's a pretty powerful statement. And I think, as opposed to Bernie's top 1% stuff, you're really focusing on performance and calling for strategic actions. And the banks have been earning less than their cost of capital, which is another way of saying they're destroying value and stock prices should go down. They have low returns on equity now. You were mentioning the stock prices are still below where they were two decades ago. You're calling for just more accountability coming out of annual meetings, moving up the chain, right?
Yeah, this is a little bit of back to the future. I'm pretty much alone in attending annual meetings. A lot of people think of annual meetings as events where, you know, retirees go and you get some free food and you get to listen to what management says for free. In fact, I got an invitation to join AARP, and then you know, and then I started to attend annual meetings. But it can be a lot more than that. This is the only time each year that any individual, including Wall Street analysts like myself, can go and ask questions not of the senior management, but of those overseeing senior management, the board of directors. And for me, Jim, as you know, I've worked on Wall Street for about 25 years, and I started writing independent research reports, and then there was all sorts of backlash from the banks. They didn't like what, you know, what we had written. And then I testified to Congress, as you mentioned, and still things didn't change. And then I've done some media like, you know, your program, and things still didn't change. And I testified to the Crisis Commission in Washington, D.C. on the causes of the crisis. I wrote a book, and still not enough changed. So my next course of action is what I'm doing now. This is the fourth year in a row that I'll be attending annual meetings of the large banks to ask the directors, why aren't you holding your management teams more accountable? And this is less than holding it accountable to the government. From a public policy standpoint, the banks are safe. Why aren't you holding the bank management teams accountable for generating better returns?
Now, Mike, this movement to lead directors or more independent directors, or even you were saying on BNY Mellon, they've got a member of an activist group, a hedge fund. Is that movement in the right direction? Is that yielding any results, or are these annual meetings still a joke?
The annual meetings are still a joke. I mean, I'm not going to mince words here. I mean, this is the management teams are trying to check a box, get out of there without saying anything. Sometimes you have some crazy questions. But I'll tell you, I think things can change. So, you know, I attended the annual meeting for BNY Mellon a couple years ago, Bank of New York. And, you know, subsequent to that, you've had activists move into the stock, and now you have an activist on the board of a major bank, in the case of Bank of New York, you know, for the first time that I've ever seen. And so now that they've had that activist on the board, and this is not, you think activists, oh, short-term profits, let's sell. Now, these activists, Trian, you know, they hold for typically 5 years or more. And since this activist has been on the board, you notice that management is more attuned to running the company for the benefit of customers, you know, of, you know, the government, but also for the shareholders, the owners. And you've noticed a change. In fact, Bank of New York this past week, you know, had, you know, better than expected earnings for the fifth quarter in a row, and that coincides with the period in which this activist director has been on their board. So I think it's a win-win.
Interesting.
For all parties.
You think the CEOs, I mean, you're actually looking for accountability from the chairman of the boards or these independent folks. Have you moved up from the CEO to try to be catalyst of change?
I'm going to reach back to your opening comment about Bernie Sanders. Banks need to be broken up. From the shareholder perspective, I don't think it's one size fits all. Some banks have performed very well. Wells Fargo, J.P. Morgan, these are banks that have performed well over, you know, a long period of time. On the other hand, some banks have performed poorly, not only, you know, from a government or public policy standpoint, but from a shareholder perspective, banks such as Citigroup and Bank of America. So, you know, if we were going to have a Mayo axiom on banks, it would be if a bank has had poor performance for a long period of time and there's not a credible plan for significantly improving that performance, then they need to consider a plan B. And plan B would include, you know, breaking up, selling off pieces of the bank.
Which still to me is pretty profound stuff because you're only hearing that out of Bernie right now. Some of these post-Dodd-Frank things, now you think there's safest utilities, but you don't think they're going to be able to outperform utilities that much is what you're saying, and that's kind of what the scary thing is?
Well, I think, you know, it's scary, but it's fantastic. And so we think that banks can have more utility-like outcomes, more annuity-like outcomes, and that's the way banking is supposed to be. I think regulators, the government, and the shareholders can all agree that less risky banks, stronger balance sheets, more certain outcomes, a foundation where banks are pillars of strength and stability the way they're supposed to be, is good for the public and it's good for shareholders too. More utility-like outcomes can get rewarded in stock prices. And we actually think the stock price of these banks is missing that transformational change The regulatory reaction has really hurt returns and revenues of the banks. But the flip side of that is the foundations are very strong, and they should have more utility-like outcomes. So I guess what we'd say is, you know, thank you, regulators, for making banks more stable. But at the same time, you know, let's ease up. And by the way, banks, you still need to generate profits. Some banks manage to do it. Others don't. And if you're in the latter category, you know, step up to the plate and perform better.
Let me ask a question about the living wills and really what that means or what the impact is when a Citibank passes it and they've had a terrible record and some of the safest banks fail it. What does that mean? Anything?
The idea of a living will is that a bank needs to show that it could be dismantled during a period of crisis. First, I'd say this is still fighting the last war. I mean, the big banks are incredibly safe now. You're not going to have big bank failures. I mean, the situation during the Great Recession, the most recent crisis, that was as bad as you had since the Great Depression. I'm not saying this happens, you know, every 70 or 80 years, but you certainly have much safer balance sheets. Second, this is an exercise that encourages banks to simplify and streamline and reduce their legal entities. So from that standpoint, it's a good exercise. Having said that, some of the largest banks cannot fail. I'm sorry to disappoint people, but they're too big to fail, and that doesn't go away.
You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Business Talk Radio Network, 350 affiliated stations around the country. You can go to the website and find the station dearest to you, listen over the Internet, access our archive of podcasts. Coming next, we're going to look at some of the big banks on the eve of annual meetings, which are starting next week. Stay with us.
Have you heard about BizTV? BizTV is the home for America's entrepreneurs, small businesses, and those who want to succeed in life. It's the first national television network committed to airing original, high-quality, educational, and inspirational programming about real business people. Small businesses drive America forward, generating 64% of all new jobs in the last decade. With over 30 million small businesses in the U.S., shouldn't you be watching BizTV? With the right kind of ideas, motivation, and education to help fuel the next generation of business owners, BizTV is the network you should be watching. Success stories, new ideas turned into businesses, programs full of sales tips, goal setting, how to manage, how to raise capital, and improving work-life balance. BizTV is for those who want to succeed. Visit BizTV.com and call your satellite or cable service provider to request BizTV.
This is an important message to all listeners. If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes to the IRS, the tax pros at OIC Tax want to help you. OIC Tax is dedicated to helping taxpayers just like you with their IRS problems.
I owed a lot of money to the IRS. I was working long hours and weekends just to make ends meet. To make matters worse, the IRS was about to garnish my wages, and I needed to file several years of back tax returns. Then I called the tax professionals at OIC Tax. They stopped the IRS from garnishing my wages. They even placed my account into the IRS's financial hardship program so I don't have to make any payments to the IRS. That's right, no payments to the IRS while I'm in this program.
Call OIC Tax today to see if you qualify for the IRS's financial hardship program. Call 800-790-5988. Call now and mention you heard this radio commercial and receive 10% off their already low fees. 800-790-5988. That number, 800-790-5988. Call now, 800-790-5988.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570, 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
Today, more than ever, Americans need a means to protect their life savings. With a troubled economy and government spending out of control, they've been forced to promote loose money policies, which decreases the value of the dollar and promotes inflation. Birch Gold Group can help you protect your savings by rolling over all or a portion of your IRA or 401k into an IRA backed by physical gold. Take advantage of the best gold prices in years and enjoy the long-term hedge against inflation that gold provides by moving into a gold IRA from Birch Gold Group, the precious metal IRA specialists. Call Birch Gold Group today for a free consultation on how a tax-free rollover to a gold IRA can offer stability, protection, and the peace of mind that your life savings, which you've worked so hard to build, is safe. Call 888-999-1351 and receive Birch Gold's free information kit, which offers the best-kept secrets for safeguarding your savings with gold. Call 888-999-1351. That's 888-999-1351.
BizTalkRadio.com.
And our guest, leading Wall Street bank analyst Mike Mayo. Next Tuesday, we start these annual meetings he was alluding to, and we're going to look inside Citibank first, which has had obviously probably the worst performance of any bank and still the largest discount to their tangible value. They've got some proposals on the agenda, including breakup of the bank and executive comp. Tell us what you'd like to see happen at that meeting.
Well, as a reminder, Citigroup is the only large U.S. bank that has a chairman separate from the CEO. So for starters, we'd like to hear the chairman, Mike O'Neill, talk about his oversight of the company. And for all the progress that Citigroup has made, in fact, they had the best returns they've had since the pre-crisis last year. For all that progress, their returns are still below what's termed the cost of capital, the level where they go from value destruction to value creation. So we want to know, what are they going to do to improve those returns to where they create value? If they don't have a credible plan for the next couple of years, what is their plan B?
What about on the great inflation on executive comp, they call it?
So we really like the scorecard that Citigroup has in what's termed a proxy. Those are the materials for the annual meeting, and they color code it. You get green, yellow, or red, depending on how each executive performed. But we thought the grades were a little high, given the performance of the company. So we'd like more understanding on the compensation. So, but by the way, I want to go back to that breakup proposal, which is, it's not just the compensation. You also have a proposal to require an analysis of a breakup of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's proposal number 8. And so we actually agree with proposal number 8 because the thought is that if you're not generating returns that create value, then consider a plan B, and plan B should include, you know, analyzing breaking up parts of the company. And, you know, we're sure that Citigroup's analyzed this. We would just like to see the math. Let us see the math on what a breakup might look like.
Are they in favor of that, or are they against that, proposal 8?
They're very much against proposal number 8. Their view is they've looked at it. They'll do the right thing. They've already sold a lot of assets, and they have. Citigroup has shrunk. They've streamlined. They've gotten much better. Their balance sheet's very strong. But our view is they haven't done enough.
Now, they've got that the separate chairman and the CEO, Mike O'Neill, who's got, as you said, 4 decades of restructuring under his belt. And Corbett, who is the new CEO, they have wound down the bad bank and all of that and those changes you said. Are they working well together? Are they doing enough? Is Mike O'Neill's reputation not yet caught up with the stock price?
Well, that's a good question, Jim. And this is the only time of year when you can see both the CEO and chairman working together. The other years they were on the stage together and talking and, you know, seemingly reacting pretty well together. Having said that, you know, I think shareholders are putting them on a shorter leash, both the CEO and the chairman. While still, I'd put them in the positive category, you know, positive, but watching a bit more closely.
All right, before we go to Bank of America, let me ask, I'll ask this as a Citi question, but it's a proxy for all of them. These guys, their return on equity is like 5-6%. What is a level that it should be at to be respectable, and how long do you think that will take?
There's a few ways to look at that, but you have return on tangible equity. We say it should be over 10%. Citigroup and Bank of America are below that level. They've been below that level since before the financial crisis. This should take a couple more years. If they can't get it in the next couple years, they need to sell off assets. That's one reason we're going to the annual meeting saying, what are you doing to improve those returns?
All right. The next day, April 27th, next Wednesday, the Bank of America is on deck. You were saying before, they don't like a lot of objective analysis thrown in their face. They have a lead independent director you can talk about, and then they have a big gap in their return on assets versus what their own target is. Take us through BOA.
So first, I'd like to say for Citigroup and Bank of America, we now recommend these stocks. We upgraded Bank of America last quarter for the first time in several years. Bank of America has a much stronger balance sheet. They've also had better returns than they had before, but it's still not where it should be. We actually recommend Bank of America stock, which is unique for me for the most of this decade. But we'd like to see a better tone at the top of the company. And it's good for your listeners, and this is what I do, read the CEO letter in the annual report. That's just the first 5 or 6 pages. If you're interested in a company, just read those few pages from the CEO. What Bank of America did this year is the first page in their annual report, they have a whole page by the lead director. That's the person on the board of directors that's most responsible for overseeing the management team. And the lead director, Jack Bovender Jr., says, we'd like to engage with shareholders more. Well, we'd like to see, you know, the words backed up by actions. And, Jim, I am still furious over the behavior at the shareholder meeting at Bank of America last September 22nd. That's the meeting where the vote took place to promote the CEO to the added position of chairman. The meeting, and I was there, held in Charlotte in their tiered auditorium. There were 4 questions. One was an ex-employee, someone else. I spoke up. I was against it. And then there was a 4th and last person who spoke. And the person was very respectful, thanked the company, was saying why he thought this should not be approved. And when he was completing a sentence, in the middle of the sentence, Bank of America pulled the microphone away from him.
Jeez.
Mid-sentence. But here's the shocker. This wasn't an ex-employee or even a Wall Street analyst like me. The speaker was the representative from CalPERS and CalSTRS. CalPERS and CalSTRS, they manage $500 billion of assets for millions of people in California. Firemen, police, teachers. This person traveled 6,000 miles round trip to give a statement. But because he spoke over the 2-minute limit, the microphone was literally pulled away.
And he's an owner, essentially.
I mean, it's like he owns that microphone. And by the way, the CEO and the lead director were on stage and did absolutely nothing. This is terrible treatment of shareholders. The owners of the company, they pulled the microphone away. So this is a microcosm of the broader issue. Bank of America needs to treat shareholders better, and especially don't pull the microphone away from one of the biggest asset managers in our country who invest money for many public service employees in California. So I'm not letting that get by. And so I really hope that they allow people to ask questions and they answer those questions. And so what? By the way, that meeting last September 22nd, it lasted less than 15 minutes. This is the only time of year shareholders can ask a question. And so I hope if it goes 1 hour, 2 hours, it usually goes a couple hours. But what if it goes 3 or 4 or 5 hours? This is the one time a year where people can ask questions of the board of directors overseeing Bank of America management, a company whose stock is still at the level from 2 decades ago. Now, listen, we recommend Bank of America stock. We think the stock's going higher. We just think it would have a whole lot more upside if there was a better tone at the top of the company and more accountability of management and better engagement by this board with investors.
Well said. I just find it outrageous when you say 15 minutes of questions. And I said we're taking the show to Omaha for Warren Buffett's next week, and he allows 6 hours of questions, none of which he has seen or set up or anything. We're down to the last 40 or seconds. I'm interested in the question of, should BOA spin off Merrill Lynch? Is Merrill Lynch critical? Do they work well together?
For Bank of America, we think all options should be on the table because they've destroyed value. That is, they've had returns below their cost of capital for each year since the financial crisis. If that's the case, they should consider an adequate plan B, so they should at least consider that and answer questions related to that.
You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Coming next, some more banks undergo the Mayo examination.
This is a national health care alert from the Health Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one suffers from knee pain and have Medicare as your primary insurance, we've got great news. You could qualify for a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost to you. Get free delivery, and all the paperwork is handled by our accredited suppliers at no charge to you. So if you're on Medicare and have knee pain, don't wait. You may qualify to immediately receive a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost. Friendly agents are standing by 24/7 to help you. We also have other pain-relieving braces, too, for your shoulder, ankle, or back. You may be eligible to get these items and more at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Our friendly representatives are standing by now to help you, so please call now.
Call 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301. Again, 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301.
I've owned my company for 14 years now, and I can tell you that payroll is a four-letter word. I hate doing it. It eats up hours I don't have, and it costs me money I could be saving, but my accountant's too expensive, and I'm not sure who to call, but I know I need help.
We're Paychex, and we take all the hassles out of small business payroll. We save you time and money. It's easy. Call, fax, or give us your payroll information securely online, and we take care of the rest. We calculate the correct taxes, manage payments and direct deposits. We even send out your checks. Payroll doesn't need to be a four-letter word anymore. We're so sure that we can save you time and money that we'll give you a month's payroll free. Just for calling 877-726-3369. Get 1 month's payroll for free. Call Paychex right now. 877-726-3369. That's 877-726-3369.
Has your life changed? Are you now in a situation where you need health insurance? Here's some simple advice. Call our health insurance hotline right now. This free service will do all the work for you. Shop the health insurance marketplace and find the plan that best meets your health insurance needs. Don't get lost searching for plans on your own. Let a licensed agent help you for free. According to a report on CNN Money, almost half of those eligible for subsidies are paying less than $3 a day for bronze or silver plans. Remember, under Obamacare, most Americans qualify for health insurance. So get ready to let us do all the work for you and find out the best health insurance plan for your needs. Call this number now.
800-659-7975. 800-659-7975 for your free health insurance quote. Call now. 800-659-7975. 800-659-7975.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam, for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
BizTalkRadio.com.
We're talking with Wall Street firm CLSA Managing Director Mike Mayo. He's been calling for transformational strategic change or holding banks accountable to get there. We haven't looked at regional banks or investment banks. We're going to finish up on those. And on next week, Comerica, which is a regional bank, has an annual meeting. And Mike is really primed for what could happen here. Go ahead.
So, Jim, as I mentioned, I see annual meetings as a forum where investors, not the government, but investors can hold bank managements accountable by holding the boards of directors accountable. And this is the only time of year that investors have a chance to do this. So most people, you know, probably haven't heard of Comerica. It's a top 25 bank in the country. You know, it's not Citigroup, Bank of America, or J.P. Morgan, but it's a regional bank. They have operations in Texas and Michigan and California mostly. The issue with Comerica is that they've had poor returns for each of the last 8 years, and they're the only top 20 bank that's failed to add a new director to its board of directors. So what's interesting here is, as I've talked to the owners of Comerica, the shareholders, I have not seen a group of shareholders this upset since the financial crisis. Shareholders, the owners of this bank, Comerica, are so upset that we think this annual meeting could be a watershed event. As I said, Jim, these annual meetings are considered check-the-box exercises where management just try to get out of the room without saying much or anything at all. But we think in this case, there'll be enough questions asked of the company that management and the directors, importantly the directors, will, you know, feel, you know, compelled to answer some pointed shareholder questions. And what this will do is it'll kind of raise the veil on the degree of shareholder anger. Now, typically shareholders, if they're upset, they vote with their feet. They sell and move out. But in this case, a lot of these shareholders have held the stock for several years, and they'd like to see change. So the options for this regional bank, Comerica, which I would say is true for any large bank, going back, you know, if we have a Mayo axiom, it is any bank that's had poor returns for a long period of time without a credible plan to do so should consider a plan B. In the case of Comerica, that plan B could be a more dramatic restructuring, a sale of assets, or even a sale of the bank. So we're kind of, we'll take any scenario that improves the returns for shareholders, the owners of the company.
Interesting that in the notes you'd given me that this was the first stock outperform rating that was put on in 20 years. That's pretty unbelievable.
Well, I think Comerica's done a good job since they had what was termed a merger of equals. By the way, the merger of equals that Comerica did, like some of the other big banks that merged, didn't turn out so well for the stockholders. This was back in 1992. You had two Michigan-based banks that merged. And I remember the CEO back in 1992, you know, his mantra was preserve the franchise. Well, guess what? Here we are. It's 2016, almost 25 years later, and they have preserved the franchise. It's a good franchise. They have a strong balance sheet. It's just this regional bank, Comerica, has not been optimized. So this raises a broader question for shareholders. If you have a strong franchise, strong balance sheet that hasn't been optimized, what should shareholders do? And what we think shareholders are looking to do more is to put more of the active back in active asset management. So you have, you know, two types of money managers. One is passive active management, where you just give your money to an index fund and, you know, they invest in a basket of securities. And the other type is active asset management. Well, active asset management involves actively picking stocks, but it can also mean actively engaging with the companies that you invest in. So I think you'll see an example here at Comerica's annual meeting of more active asset management. By the way, this is not activism. This is not like the Carl Icahn activism.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I would consider this, you know, doing your job. This is simply asking reasonable questions of company management. In this case, Comerica, returns have fallen short of where they should have been for the last 8 years. What are you doing to improve it? These are fair questions. That doesn't make you an activist. If anything, those shareholders who go to this meeting and ask these questions are doing their job quite well.
Now, as you said, this is the only bank since the crisis that has not added a new director. Are you calling for that?
We're not going here trying to be inflammatory or anything like that. I mean, that's the fact. They haven't changed a director in like 7 or 8 years. And when I say they've changed director, they haven't added a new director to the board over a long period of time when all the other top 20 banks have at least added one new director, most in the last few years. So why haven't you added a new director? Clearly, this has a sort of leading question. They've had one director on the board since 1991, since that merger of equals that created Comerica. So why is that person still on the board? What does he bring to the table here? So, again, the bigger picture here is whether it's Comerica or Citigroup or Bank America or another underperforming bank, you know, if you've underperformed for a long period of time, at some point you say, well, how many times do you want to ask the CEO the same question? You know, at some point you want to say, okay, who are the people overseeing management and what are their views and how are they holding them accountable? It'd be kind of like if you have a sports team and they keep losing and they keep getting a coach every few years. Well, at some point you'd like to talk to the general manager of the whole organization, and that's kind of what we're looking to do.
You say in a couple of your notes that the banks are too reliant on getting to higher rates to increase their net income return versus cost of capital. What do you mean by that? That is the Fed starts raising rates, that they're going to get better spreads, and it's not really going to be business related?
Well, this certainly applies to Comerica and Bank America and really almost all the banks. That is, once rates increase, the Federal Reserve raises rates and longer term interest rates increase, that'll be very good for the banks and you could argue it would also be good for the economy. It would facilitate economic growth more through the banks than through these unusual policy measures that have taken place this decade. But in the case of individual banks, we don't like the strategy, which we would say Comerica has embraced the last few years. They might be changing. Of, you know, shine your shoes, go to work, and wait for interest rates to increase.
Yeah.
You know, a strategy based on hope, you know, doesn't cut it. We'd like to see banks take control of their destiny. And to be fair, there are, you know, several competitors of Comerica and larger banks that have good returns, even in this very difficult interest rate environment. On the other side, you have some banks like Comerica or Bank America with poor returns. So all we're saying is take control of your destiny. And this is no different. You know, Jim, if we owned 100% of one of these banks, you know, you wouldn't say, what's your plan to improve returns? And they say, well, we're going to wait for rates to increase. You wouldn't accept that. In fact, that's the perspective I take a lot of time in analyzing these banks. If I owned 100%, would it be okay the way they're acting? Would it be okay for Comerica, this regional bank, to say, well, you know, when interest rates increase, we'll do better? And on that matter, whether it's Comerica or the Bank America example I gave before in your show, Jim, you really better be able to ask questions to get answers. And it's not just they aren't doing you a favor. It's more like this is what the owners of the company should expect.
All right. Now, if we move to the investment banks, they also happen to have annual meetings in May, Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley in particular. Goldman just had a terrible quarter, 40% revenue down. In their lending and investment segment, 95% down. They're hearing some pressure about business model transformation, particularly Goldman, and not demonstrating that they're really stepping up to consider that. They have very low ROEs, too, and yet they still have tremendous levels of compensation. Where do you come down on the investment banks?
Jim, you are so right. This quarter was a wow. I mean, the Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley had the worst quarter of the largest banks. Trading was down more than the others. But on the one hand, very strong balance sheets, strong capital, high liquidity, not going to fail,
yeah.
Not close to it.
Good point.
Very solid foundation. You know, really what the regulators and politicians have wanted, that Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley have gone in that direction. The issue is, you know, can they be better optimized? Now, Goldman Sachs is the A student. Goldman Sachs has had good returns, but they have fallen here most recently to maybe it's, you know, a B student or B minus this last quarter was bad. And it looks like it's going to be tough this year for Goldman to generate the double-digit returns that the market expects. So that's kind of a wait to be seen. Morgan Stanley, on the other hand, they were a D student trying to become a B student. They're trying to move up. And so it's been a long road for them, and they expect to improve their returns in the next couple years. But we are going to the annual meetings. We might be the only one there on, you know, representing Wall Street for both Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs will be at that annual meeting for the first time. And we're going to ask them, you're keeping a lot of your infrastructure intact for better times. We heard that same story 4 years ago. We still don't have better times. How much longer are you going to keep the infrastructure intact before you say, you know what, we need to downsize even more than they've already done, simplify more, maybe just reduce some of their business lines?
Well, we may have to have you back at the end of the month of May to see if you got any of these kinds of questions answered. It's always fun to have Mike on, and he's raising a lot of questions. If all these big banks are not generating enough money to cover their cost of capital, that's not a good thing. That's not a long-term viable strategy for a bank. So thanks again to Mike. That book again of his, Exile on Wall Street, One Analyst's Fight to Save the Big Banks from Themselves. We'll try and see how these annual meetings end up. We'll check back with them. Mike, thanks for your time. Good luck.
Thanks for having me.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370, 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers, too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618. Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630. Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off. Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
BizTalkRadio.com.
The man whose name is on the Dodd-Frank financial reform bill, the most ambitious reform of the financial system since the Depression-era reforms under FDR. That's Barney Frank. He represented the 4th Congressional District in Massachusetts for over three decades and chaired the House Financial Services Committee from 2007 to 2011 during the financial crash and the aftermath of the near global financial collapse. All right, let's look at some of what you think the performance has been of some of the reform institutions that came out of Dodd-Frank. There's SIFI, the systemically important financial institutions, and you see GE is actually unraveling GE Capital because of it, and the Consumer Protection Financial Board, which you already mentioned. How do you think they've all done?
Well, the last is one of the things that is, I think, one of the great examples of how government can function. It was Senator Warren's idea. I fought very hard to get that into the bill. All of the negative predictions have failed. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has returned billions of dollars to consumers. It has protected people against abuse, and there are zero showings that it has done things wrong. You know, it has a lot of critics. So if they had been abusive, if they had been destructive, you would have heard about it. I think they have done very, very well. As to the Financial Stability Oversight Council, they're the ones who decide if you are a SIFI or not. Fortunately, they haven't been tested in one way because we haven't had a failure. What they've done so far has been pretty good. For example, they insisted on some reform in the money market funds. The SEC couldn't get the votes to do some prudential changes in money market fund regulation, and the FSOC, as we call it, stepped in and said, you got to do something, and something did happen. They actually differ with them to some extent, and I think they've been too tough or too expansive with regard to the designation of systemically important financial institutions, or SIFIs. They have covered some that should have been covered, like AIG, because they'd gotten into trouble. And as you know, it was the regulation that came with being so designated that led GE right. to do what I think has been in everybody's interest, including GE's, get rid of the financial stuff, get back into being a first-rate national manufacturing industry. I think that's a good example of the bill. On the other hand, they've been talking about covering some insurance companies, for example, that just basically stay with the business of insurance, didn't get into credit default swaps like AIG. I think that's a mistake.
Yeah,
so I have spoken out against expanding their jurisdiction to some extent over institutions that I don't think are systemic threats. But where we are talking about the institutions under their control, I think they've been very helpful. They have told them in some cases not to pay dividends. And as far as moral hazard, I think it is now clear to the people who run these institutions that if they get into an AIG-type situation where they can't pay their debts, they're finished. They're out of business. They cannot expect to come in and stay on the job.
Okay, what would Barney Frank do with Fannie and Freddie?
It is interesting, by the way. The Republicans have made a big noise about them. The chairman of the House Financial Services Committee now, Jeb Hensley, offered an amendment in 2010 to basically abolish them. And we said, no, not in this bill. We'll take it up next year. But by that time, they were in charge. The Republicans have now been in power for 11, 12, 13, 14, and most of 15, and they have done nothing about Fannie and Freddie. It's fascinating. They complain about it and blame everybody else. They ran the Congress for 12 years, from 95 to 2006, didn't do one thing to restrain Fannie and Freddie. We did, working with Paulson, give him the power to put them in a conservatorship and convert them from a money loser to a money maker. They have now been in power again in the House since 2011, and once again have done nothing. So their record is they talk and don't do anything. I think the proposal that had come forward from some bipartisan senators from the Obama administration probably makes the most sense, which is do away with them as these quasi-public institutions. You correctly noted there's a conflict between their social goal and their profit motive, and instead set up legislation that allows institutions to sell lenders a hedge against interest rate risk.
Let's sort of get to the end now with something that's sort of related to all this. But to me, a huge problem in this country is a growing income inequality. And it's a tough thing to get your arms around in terms of fixing, right, beyond tax the rich.
The fact is the Republican Party has basically taken a position that we should drive wages down. Look at this. There recently been a decision by the National Labor Relations Board that would be very helpful for low-income workers. We're not talking about welfare recipients now. And I don't mean to denigrate welfare recipients. In some cases, people are there because they have no alternatives. But low-wage workers in services in the food industry, they've been victimized by this move towards contracting and franchising. The National Labor Relations Board just voted 3-2 for a rule that will increase their ability to organize. In fact, this whole Republican assault on unions is a major reason, unfortunately a successful one, beginning with Reagan, that has lowered wages. You can raise the minimum wage. You can protect the notion that the federal government will pay a certain wage in construction projects. You can put more people to work in construction, as an example. You can also, over the longer term, make it much less burdensome for people to go to community colleges and state colleges. Those are all public policies that can have both a short-term and a long-term effect on diminishing inequality. Obviously, you have to have inequality. It's a good thing in a society that's run on the market basis, but it shouldn't be this big. And you have the problem is the Republicans are against it, the Democrats are for it. I mean, give me one last example.
All right, we'll tax your short attention span now, finishing up with a couple of quick questions off the top of your mind. You can answer, who's the best president that you found to work with?
I worked most closely with Barack Obama, but that's because I was not in a position under Bill Clinton to work with. Well, I do think Bill Clinton had the best instincts and skills for working together. Interestingly, probably had a major impact with the Bush administration, but not with the president himself, but he gave Bernanke and Paulson the mandate to work. But in terms of actually getting things done, I had the most impact working with the Obama administration. But again, that's because I was chairman of a committee by then and not in the same position under Clinton.
Who would you put as the top legislator?
Do you have children?
Do I have children? Yeah, four.
Which one's your favorite?
I know, I understand. Okay, you're just being diplomatic
here. Okay,
I didn't know you were a diplomat. All right, final thing. Is Hillary going to win?
You do not succeed as a legislator without an awful lot of diplomacy.
And Senator Mitchell made the same point, and he was very effective. Last question, will Hillary
win? Let me say this. I get more credit for that than George, because George is, by temperament, nicer than me. So I had to show much more restraint than George in doing that.
Final, will Hillary win?
I think Hillary's likely to win, and I'll make this prediction on regard to the emails. Yeah, it was a mistake to do both of them, but I do not think it was a mistake that in any way reflects on our ability to be president.
This has been a great interview. We really appreciate the time. I want to thank Barney Frank, former congressman. His book, Frank, A Life in Politics, From the Great Society to Same-Sex Marriage, and of course, it is very frank, published by FSG. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks to our national audience. We'll see you next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Thank you.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. BizTalkRadio.com.